We're back here on the Frank Beckman Show and going to Washington now, where Michigan Congressman Dave Camp, the chairman of the very powerful House Ways and Means Committee, is right in the middle of a lot of important action on the debt limit discussions, as well as tax policy and free trade. We've got all of that and more to cover with Michigan's Congressman from Midland, who's on the other end of our line. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Frank. Great to be with you again.
Good of you to join us once more. The leadership met at the White House on extending the debt limit for our country yesterday, and it sounds as if they may be making some progress, although as soon as we get one report that they're moving along, we get another that says they're still far apart. What are you hearing from your leadership?
Well, that they're just engaged in talks, and they're trying to find a way to get the kind of fundamental reforms that we're going to need, as well as the spending reductions, both short-term and long-term, in order to get this debt crisis under control.
Where do the Republicans stand on the Obama administration's continuous call for more taxes and ending a number of deductions in the tax system?
Well, we're against tax increases, and the reason is that as they propose those are going to fall on small business owners particularly, and that's the sector we need to have beginning to grow again. And they're not growing; they're not adding jobs. Their margins are still very tight. Many are struggling, and we certainly saw with the unemployment numbers out this morning that the unemployment rate nationally has gone up, and that's because that we aren't seeing the recovery that we need to see. So that's not going to work. But what we do need is fundamental tax reform, and in fundamental tax reform, we could get to a growing economy. That's just one part of what we need to do to get the economy back. But I believe that if we could lower rates and simplify the code, and have fewer special provisions. You know, a few years ago, there were 13 tax provisions that expired every couple of years that primarily at that time impacted business. Now there are over 200. So the uncertainty, the complexity is really something we need to address. But even more importantly, we now have a whole raft of personal income tax provisions that expire every couple of years, whether it be estate tax or income tax rates or investment taxes that affect individuals. That's completely untenable. If we want to track the kind of investment and have the kind of investment decisions made, we need to have some certainty and some continuity to our tax system. We don't have that right now.
When we hear conversation about ending the deduction for investment in business or for charitable donations or home mortgage, do you consider those tax increases? Because the American public seems to.
Well, I think you have to look at tax reform in what I call a revenue-neutral way and not use it as a way to raise revenue. And the way the president has been talking about sort of one-offing one or two tax provisions, he's doing that to try to have more revenue to the government. Frankly, I think bringing more revenue to the government is not what we need to be doing right now. We need to look at a historical average of revenue and sort of be in that target range. And we need to reform the code. We don't need to increase taxes, and we don't need to use that as an excuse to increase taxes or pay down the debt. We need to do it in a way that makes our code really one for the 21st century that will foster the kind of growth and creativity and investment that we need to have, both for individuals as well as businesses. And the reason you have to do both is so many businesses now are organized as what they call pass-through entities, which means they file as individuals, but they're actually businesses. And that is something over the last 25 years, since the last time we looked at tax reform, that has changed dramatically. We also have to be aware of what's happening in the world. And around the world, we're seeing tax reform in every other country. And finance and investment and capital is mobile, and it goes all over the world. And so we can't just be in our own vacuum and assume that we can do whatever we want. We have to be aware of what's happening around the world, and what's happening around the world is there's significant tax reform occurring in every country and almost certainly many countries that we're competing with.
But we're also seeing a lot of these countries around the world in Europe that have engaged in profligate spending that are facing bankruptcy and truly not being able to repay all of their debts. This is a major, major problem, and their answer over there has simply been, well, we're going to try to cut back on some of the entitlements we have, and they've been met with all sorts of protests and riots over there.
Well, we're going to have to make some changes to the long-term promises that have been made because they're false promises, frankly, right now. We aren't going to be able to keep them at the level that they're at, and everybody knows it, and the sooner we begin to address this, the better. And I think they're seeing some discussions of these things occur in the White House, but to not address these long-term, whether you call them entitlements or social safety net programs, in a way that makes them sustainable for the next 50, 60 years, to ignore that we need that's something we need to do, I think is really creating a false promise for people. If we make some minor changes to those, they'll be sustainable for the long-term future, for not just today's retirees, but well into the future. And that's what we need to do, and that's part of what they're I hope will end up in the discussions. But we need to have a pro-growth tax policy, but there are many other issues we need to address. I've been working on passing the three pending free trade agreements that have been pending for more than 4 years. Just to compare by example, the European Union has 40 trade agreements pending, and frankly, in some cases, they've taken templates that we negotiated years ago but have not yet passed, and they're passing them before we do. So we do need to get back in the game in terms of finding new markets and exports and the jobs that those exports will support in the United States. That's something we need to continue to address. The committee, both in the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee, passed an initial markup of the three trade agreements. We have the president now needs to send them to the Hill. We'll have a second markup and then a vote in the Congress. But
those
trade, we're moving
deals,
along on those.
They're South Korea, Colombia, and Panama, and you've got, it seems, agreement from the White House on this. President Obama's in favor of these agreements. In Michigan, Senators Debbie Stabenow and Carl Levin, both Democrats, are in favor. Unions, including the UAW, have spoken up in favor of these trade agreements. And yet there's a group called American Jobs Alliance, which has got a media campaign targeting you on this to try to convince folks to pressure you to vote the other way.
Well, you're right, Frank. There's broad consensus on these agreements. I believe that many people feel that if we don't continue to find new markets, just for example, in Colombia, it was our largest export market for agricultural products in South America. We've lost market share now to Argentina and other countries that have moved aggressively on creating trade agreements with Colombia. So it's no longer our top export market in Colombia. What we don't want to do is lose market share and lose the access to these markets, because once you do, and they establish contacts with other suppliers, other countries, it's very hard to get those back. So that's why you see broad consensus on moving the three forward. There have been particularly in South Korea, it's a very large market in Asia. We need to have a counterweight to China in Asia. South Korea will help provide us that. It's very important to do it. We do need to reduce tariffs because many of these goods come into our country, particularly in South Korea. Not only do we reduce tariffs for our goods going there, but also the non-tariff barriers that the Koreans have been famous for, we also address those as well. And I think it's an important reform. It doesn't mean it makes it perfect, but it's certainly a better situation than we have now, and we need to get access to that very large and growing market in Asia. In terms of Colombia, they're on the UN Security Council.
Right.
Not only do we need a friend in Latin America, they're certainly a country that has made great strides in terms of the rule of law, and also they very much want to engage in export and trade with us as well.
Has South Korea agreed not to place tariffs on imports of auto-related parts, etc.?
We have addressed, there was an addendum to the trade South Korean trade agreement with regard to our access to the Korean market on autos. And it is an addendum that has been supported by both, as you mentioned, the UAW, some in industry, particularly Ford and Motor Company, as well as Democrats and Republicans, because it does address the difficult access. Sometimes it's not just tariffs. Sometimes they say, oh, well, you haven't filled out the right safety regulations, or you haven't completed some paperwork. And this does address that. We will get access to their market. And I think that's going to be that's an important development.
Indeed, that's how we protect jobs, by not allowing them to place those tariffs on. A quick comment from you on a meeting that you'll have next Wednesday, and rather historic one. It's the first time since 1940 that the Ways and Means Committee is going to get together with the Senate Finance Committee for a joint hearing on tax policy, especially the most basic provision of interest payments on business debt, where deductions are allowed to businesses right now, that sort of encourages large companies to borrow. And we hear some of them are even paying their dividends with the borrowing. It almost sounds like the home mortgage interest deduction they're getting in business.
Yeah, we're looking at this whole idea of debt financing versus equity financing and how that impacts business activity. But the whole purpose is to continue to address in a positive way the need to reform our tax code. And you're right, it's been more than 70 years since the House and Senate Finance and Ways and Means Committee got together on tax policy, but times are critical, and both Senator Baucus and I think it's very important that we try to address these issues in not just a bipartisan way, but in a House-Senate way, because you can pass the greatest bill you want in the House, and it may not go anywhere in the Senate. So we understand that not all the divisions are between parties. Some of the divisions are between what the House and Senate desire to do. So we're combining both parties, as well as House and Senate members, on, I think, a very important issue, and I'm looking very forward to addressing this. And I very much appreciate Senator Baucus's willingness to work together on this issue.
And I got a final question for you that I just need help understanding here. And it goes back to raising the debt ceiling. In closing, Congressman Camp, because you're the expert in all of this, you do this for a living. You crunch all these numbers and gauge the impact on our economy. We're told August 2nd is this big deadline that we're going to default as a nation if we don't raise the debt ceiling by then. I'm taking a look at the numbers. I found a great website for trying to understand all of this, federalbudget.com. And going over the numbers there, the U.S. government pays about $21 billion a month in interest on the national debt. We bring in $211 billion in various tax collections every month. Given those numbers, how is it a legitimate argument to tell us that we are in danger of defaulting in just a few weeks?
Well, the reason is the federal government is obligated to pay. First of all, some of this is not as clearly defined as we'd like, and some of this is because the Treasury Secretary says it so. And some of these are items Secretary Geithner has sent in terms of letters and public statements. But the federal government pays its debts on a daily basis, not on a monthly basis, so that on any given day, the obligations of the government could exceed the revenues that have come in. And there is a report issued every day about the revenue that the federal government's received. And in February, there were five occasions when revenue did not even meet interest payments on the debt. So that means that there was, without borrowing, there would be a default. And even if on a daily basis, the obligations are not met, and you pay interest and principal on the obligations, you still have other contractual obligations that come due. And if those aren't met, that is technically a default if you aren't meeting the obligations of the government. So that is the issue. We continue to hear from the secretary that August 2nd is the real date that but that information and that decision is really within the secretary's discretion. He has access to the information that we don't have in terms of what special conditions he can continue to do in order to prevent a default. But we still believe that we have to look at August 2nd as the date that we need to act by.
Do you believe him?
I don't have much choice. Yeah. I mean, because this is what he said repeatedly in both, written statements to me, letters to me, and also public statements. He continues to say that August 2nd is the date. We've also had some outside groups looking at it that also confirm that. But I don't have access to all of the data that he's got, so I have to take him at his word on that.
All right. Well, thank you for helping us understand that. It's not always as simple as we think it may be, and I appreciate you putting that into pretty much layman's terms for us and explaining. Have a great weekend.
Well, you too, Frank. Great to talk to you.
Same here. Congressman Dave Camp of Midland, helping to keep all of us the best informed audience in radio.